All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're taking a look at a case that kind of shows us how environmental laws actually work in the real world. We're going to be looking at Thomas v. Peterson, a Ninth Circuit case that's pretty much like environmental law 101. So if you want to really understand how laws like NEPA and the ESA work, you definitely need to know this one.
This one's huge. Thomas v. Peterson, it was decided back in 1985, but it's still super relevant today.
Oh, yeah.
It really shows how courts look at actions taken by the government,
Yeah.
especially making sure that different agencies are actually following the rules set out in our main environmental laws.
Okay, so let me set the scene a little bit. We're in Idaho's Nez Perce National Forest, specifically a place called Jersey Jack. The U.S. Forest Service had this plan to build a logging road, but it wasn't just about getting some timber. They wanted to open up this whole area for logging for like the next 20 years. And as you can imagine, local landowners and conservation groups weren't exactly thrilled about that, so they took the Forest Service to court.
And for all you law students out there, this case is like a gold mine.
Oh, yeah.
It shows this classic battle between using our natural resources and trying to protect the environment. What makes this case so useful is that the court really breaks down what agencies have to do under NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act, and the ESA, the Endangered Species Act. You'll see how important it is for these agencies to follow every single step in that whole environmental review process.
That's right. So today, we're going deep into this case, exploring why NEPRA required the Forest Service to consider the combined impact of the road and all that future logging. We'll also look at why arguments using the National Forest Management Act, or NFMA, didn't really hold up in court. And super importantly, we'll focus on the Endangered Species Act and why following its procedures is not optional. Get ready for some serious aha moments, especially when we talk about connected actions, the legal pitfalls of segmentation, and why doing a biological assessment under the ESA is absolutely non-negotiable.
All right, so let's start with NEPA. That's really where a lot of the court's reasoning comes in. The Forest Service prepared these environmental assessments, or EAs, you can think of an EA, like a preliminary environmental impact study. They did one EA for the road construction itself, and they plan to do more EAs later for each timber sale. And in these first assessments, they concluded that there wouldn't be a significant impact. So they issued what's called a FONSI, a finding of no significant impact.
Okay, so basically they looked at the road and said, hey, building this road by itself won't cause any major environmental problems. Then they looked at the logging, again, kind of separately, and reached the same conclusion. But the people who sued, the plaintiffs, and eventually the Ninth Circuit Court agreed with them, said that this piecemeal approach really missed a key point about how environmental impacts can build up over time.
And that key point has to do with what are called connected actions. These are defined in regulations from the Council on Environmental Quality, or CEQ. That's the council that sets the rules for how NEPA is implemented. CEQ regulations say there are three ways actions can be connected. First, if one action automatically leads to other projects, they would usually need a full environmental impact statement, a full EIS, which is way more detailed than an EA. Second, if actions can't really happen unless other actions are taken before or at the same time. And third, if actions are like pieces of a larger plan and they only make sense as part of that bigger plan.
All right, so thinking about Thomas B. Peterson, it's pretty clear that this road wasn't just being built for fun, right? Like the whole point was to get to that timber so they could start logging.
And that's exactly why the court said that the road and the timber sales were, as they put it, inextricably intertwined. The Forest Service even said in their own EA for the road that the purpose was to access timberlands to be developed over the next 20 years. That's really key. That statement right there directly links the road to the future logging. It's pretty interesting how the agency's own words were used against them in court.
It really is. So, because these actions were so closely linked, the court said the Forest Service couldn't just treat them as separate, unrelated projects. That's what's called segmentation, right?
Segmentation is when an agency tries to break a big project with potentially big environmental impacts into smaller pieces, kind of hoping that each piece will seem less harmful and they can avoid doing a full EIS. But the Ninth Circuit Court saw right through that, you know. They realized that by doing separate EAs, the Forest Service was basically trying to segment the project. They weren't looking at the whole picture, all the environmental consequences that would come from building the road and logging the forest.
It's like saying, oh, we're just building a little bridge, and totally ignoring that The whole reason for the bridge is to open up this huge wilderness area for development, which obviously would have a massive environmental impact.
Exactly. Think about it like approving a highway. You wouldn't just do an environmental review for the road itself and ignore all the development, traffic, and pollution that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what NEPA is trying to prevent, that narrow way of thinking.
Yeah.
It forces agencies to look at the whole picture, the big environmental picture, before they do something that could have major consequences. By separating the review for the road and the timber sales,
mm-hmm.
the Forest Service basically went against the main goal of NEPA, which is to make sure decisions are based on a full understanding of the potential impacts. You know, this brings up a really important question for agencies. How can you make sure you're not accidentally segmenting projects when you have these long-term goals?
Right. Now, the plaintiffs also brought up an argument using the National Forest Management Act, the NFMA.
Right.
They basically said that building this road, which would cost more than the value of the timber they'd get from it, violated the NFMA. So what did the court think about that?
Well, the court actually disagreed with them on that point. They looked at the NFMA very carefully and didn't find anything that specifically required a cost-benefit analysis for individual road projects like this one. The NFMA does have rules about the overall management plans for national forests, but the court said it doesn't directly control the economics of every single road built within those forests. What's really interesting here is how much the court relied on the exact wording or lack of wording in the law.
So basically, if you want to challenge what an agency is doing, you really need to be able to point to a very clear rule in the law itself.
Exactly.
Like, the courts are usually going to defer to the agency's interpretation unless the law is super clear on a specific point.
That's right. That's a super important lesson. Courts usually give what's called deference to how agencies interpret the laws they're supposed to be enforcing, especially when the law isn't totally clear about something.
Okay.
So in this case with the NFMA, the plaintiffs couldn't find a rule that said you can't build a road if it costs more than the timber you'll get. And without that clear rule, the court wasn't willing to question the Forest Service's judgment about the economics of the road. So this really highlights how important it is to have clear language in laws if you want to influence what agencies do through the courts.
Got it. So the NFMA argument didn't work, but the Endangered Species Act claim did. And this part of the case seems really crucial, especially when it comes to following the proper procedures. The Forest Service didn't do a biological assessment for the Rocky Mountain gray wolf, even though the project was in a designated recovery area for that species. Why was that such a big deal?
This is where the case really highlights how strict the ESA's procedures are. The basic rule under the ESA is this. If a species that's listed as endangered or threatened, like the Rocky Mountain gray wolf was, might be present in the area affected by a federal project, the agency has to do a biological assessment.
Okay.
This assessment is meant to figure out how the project might affect that species. And the court in Thomas v. Peterson made it really clear that there are almost no exceptions to this rule. It's not up to the agency to decide a species won't be affected without doing this assessment first. What's interesting is that this isn't optional. They have to do it.
So even if the Forest Service thought, hey, maybe there aren't any wolves here or this road won't really affect them, they still had to do that biological assessment?
Exactly. The fact that a listed species might be there is what triggers the requirement to do the assessment. The court made a really good analogy to explain this. They said that skipping a biological assessment under the ESA is like skipping a full environmental impact statement under NEPA when there's a chance of significant environmental impacts.
Okay.
In both situations, these aren't just optional steps. They're like built-in safeguards to make sure environmental concerns are really looked at before a project moves forward. You know, this brings up another question. How much evidence do you need to show that a species may be present to trigger this requirement?
Yeah, that's a good question. And what about the remedy the court ordered the injunction that stopped the road construction? That was all about the Forest Service not following the procedure, right? It wasn't about proving for sure that the road would harm the wolves, but about them not even doing the assessment to figure out that potential impact.
Exactly. And the court said it very clearly, and I'm going to quote them here. It is not the plaintiff's responsibility to prove effects when procedures aren't followed. The agency has the responsibility to follow the procedures in the ESA. The injunction happened because the Forest Service didn't do their duty and conduct that biological assessment. It shows how seriously the courts take these procedural rules in environmental law. Do you notice anything about how the court puts the responsibility of following the procedure squarely on the agency?
Yeah, it's interesting. So if we think about all the pieces of Thomas v. Peterson, it shows how important both the timing and the thoroughness of environmental review are.
Mm-hmm.
NEPA makes agencies consider the whole picture early on, thinking about all the connected actions and their potential cumulative impact.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ESA has these very specific non-negotiable steps that have to be followed to protect endangered species.
That's a great summary. This decision is a big deterrent for agencies that might try to get around environmental rules by breaking projects into smaller pieces. They can't just focus on the individual parts without thinking about the whole ecosystem, so to speak. This really reinforces the idea that protecting the environment often depends on having strong procedural safeguards.
And it's really striking how the economic argument using the NFMA didn't work, while the procedural arguments using NEPA and the ESA were so successful.
Yeah.
It shows that while the potential for environmental harm is obviously important, making sure agencies follow the right procedures is often the key to winning a legal challenge in environmental law.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thomas v. Peterson is still cited all the time because it lays out these fundamental principles of environmental law so clearly.
Oh, yeah.
It's used in cases that challenge segmented environmental impact statements under NEPA and cases where agencies didn't follow the ESA's procedures. It set a strong legal precedent for holding government agencies accountable for following the rules that are supposed to protect the environment.
All right, so let's recap what we've learned from Thomas v. Peterson.
Okay.
Government agencies have to carefully follow the procedures set out in environmental laws like NEPA and the ESA. Courts will enforce these procedures, and trying to avoid a full environmental review by breaking projects into smaller parts is a risky move, legally speaking.
You know, this case makes you think about something.
What's that?
Given how much emphasis there is on following procedure, could that focus sometimes overshadow the actual environmental outcomes? Is there a chance that agencies could follow the rules perfectly, but still end up harming the environment?
That's a really important question to consider as you learn more about environmental law. Think about how the ideas from Thomas v. Peterson might be used in legal strategies for today's environmental problems, like when we're building big infrastructure projects or managing natural resources in the face of climate change.
Those are some really great points to think about. We definitely encourage you to dig deeper into NEPA, the ESA, and other relevant case law to really get a good grasp on how environmental law works in practice.
And that wraps up our deep dive for today. Keep those brains working until next time.